Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. I'm Brian Zimmerman with Becker's Hospital Review. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Dr. Mia Finkelstein, Medical Director, Amwell. Dr. Finkelstein, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm really happy to be here.
Excellent. So let's dive right in then. So how would you characterize, you know, how providers are faring during this obviously difficult time? How have things changed over the course of the pandemic?
Well, things have really changed for many of us. I have been working, doing telemedicine 100% of the time, just to give perspective, for about 8 years now. I do help out at my brick and mortar, or the brick and mortars that are near me when providers go on vacation. I'm in a pretty rural area, but I've been doing this full time. So for me, it was a difference, but a difference in certain ways. For many providers who have not offered telemedicine services before, or still don't, and had to deal with seeing patients through this pandemic, I think it's changed dramatically. I think that the number one change really was noted in the work volume. You know, doctors who were on a telemedicine platform like Amwell, I mean, we had patients, especially back in March and April, it would be hard to walk away and leave your patients there. I'll phrase it that way, meaning I could have seen patients 24/7 if I wanted. There was such a critical need. And as we all know, a lot of that was not just because of sheer volume of sick patients or patients with questions who were worried well, but also because doctors in their brick and mortar practices in primary care were closing. You know, they were either on hold until the pandemic settled down, or some of them just could not really sustain their practices. And so we would have patients calling and giving us these, you know, various stories just of, you know, I tried to get in with my doctor, he's not seeing patients, or I can't get in with my doctor, it turns out that he's retiring. So just dealing with a lot of sheer volume, and the providers who are already practicing telemedicine just saw leaps and bounds in the numbers. And I, for one, found it very hard to walk away. And I'll just give you an example that, you know, I work a scheduled shift primarily, but I think most of us were signing on early for our shifts to help out when we could, and we were leaving our shifts later because it's really hard to leave when you see that there are patients there waiting to connect with a physician. So the volume was obvious. I think the second thing that really changed, and it may not have been dramatic right in the beginning, but certainly as we went on, now we're talking, you know, month three, things at home changed for us. You know, I was used to working at home alone. My husband went into work, you know, my children were in school. And then all of a sudden, you know, my husband's office closed. So he was at home. And here I am used to being alone and having my usual routine. And now that routine has changed a bit. And then you have your children who also need to work from home. One of them at the time was finishing up college, which was really interesting, you know, to be a graduate in the spring and try to navigate all of that. So it really changed things for me and as well as for them. And so we all had to have our own spaces and really stick to a schedule and respect each other. So, you know, that home change was huge for many of us. And because of these changes, there was a lot of stress, whether it was an emotional stress, a physical stress, financial stress for many, and really had to find a way to adapt to that and turn. I always like to turn negatives into positives, and that's a big ask, right, for all of us, but to really find that sort of silver lining or that positive aspect in the midst of so much negative, or I don't even like the word negative, but so much upheaval and so much change in our usual routine. So I think those were, you know, the three big ones. I know recently within Amwell, we had an internal how to deal with the stress that COVID has given the providers webinar, which was really nice because I think, you know, the people who tuned in feel the same way. And we talked about a lot of these concepts that I just mentioned and how it really affects us individually. And I think, you know, with some of the ebb and flow that has occurred since the summer months, let's say, you know, I want to say that by the end of August, September, there was a bit of an ebb there because doctors' offices in the communities were opening up again and, you know, doctors were working again. And so they were seeing patients in their brick and mortars, or they were offering telemedicine services through their brick and mortar if they weren't already, or they were available for phone calls, you know, whatever it may be. Patients were able to reach out to their primary care. And so it sort of took the volume away from us a little bit. Patients were able to get in with someone they knew. However, we also hired a lot of providers too. So that helped with the volume as well. So we had this ebb of, okay, things are a little bit better. You know, I don't feel like I'm swimming and that I have to come on early or stay late to help out. Lots of people helping me. Lots of community offices open again. But I have noticed in the last month that the volume, I don't want to say the volume, the numbers have changed. I think what's changing is the patients. You know, patients are coming in with a lot of, what's a good word for it? Something like, you know, anticipatory worry or anticipatory grief. You know, they're putting it together. This is 9 months in. The pandemic is not going away, seeing spikes of numbers in certain areas. And so this time of year, you know, where the days are shorter, it's the holidays have changed for all of us, at least with how we usually interact with our families and friends through them. There's been a change there. And people who have seasonal affective disorders, you know, the shorter days, some of the mood disorders, they're really coming to a head. And so patient visits are different now. We're back to some of that worried situation, I think, at least I am individually, seeing patients who are worried about, okay, what's lying ahead for me? You know, I'm struggling, whether it's financially or I'm struggling with my mood disorder. I tend to have it tough in the winter months anyway. And here we are coming into them with the holidays. So I think my visits are now longer, and it's a lot of hand-holding and trying to really dig into my compassion, because, you know, I try to be compassionate with every patient, and I think I do a good job of that. It's a lot of work with some people. So I think that we're seeing now this sort of flow of anxiety again, and I'm hoping it's short-lived, but it is there. So those are the things that providers have been faring with, and I think that, yeah, to give you an idea how things have changed, I think we're coming into a bit of a different sort of peak, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. I think you did a really wonderful job of taking us through this sort of evolution over, like you said, 9 months. It feels like, you know, in a lot of ways, so much longer than that, but not. Time was always relative, but it's certainly relative now. Your finishing comments there, sort of talking about this anticipatory grief patients have when they come to you, and that you sort of have to do more hand-holding. I wonder if we can dive into a bit more about, you know, you laid out some pretty universal experiential things that providers are going through in your first answer. But I'm wondering, you know, if you can talk a bit more about what has this been like personally for you, you know, providing care virtually during the pandemic, these sessions where you have to do more hand-holding and really take into account this mindset that patients are in and yourself, what you're dealing with. Can you speak to that a bit more?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think in the beginning, again, you know, to go with the pattern that we saw when things really hit and it was super busy, it was really about understanding some of my limits and realizing, okay, Mia, I can't be there 24/7, even though I'd like to be, because that's sort of how I'm wired. And I think many doctors are. You've got to help. That's why we're here. So understanding your limits, you can't be a good doctor by doing that. You have to know, you know, maybe I needed a shorter shift more frequently, you know, with more breaks in there, as opposed to working 8 hours straight, maybe 2 to 4 hours was better, take a little break and then come back at it again. I also had to learn that, you know, not only could I do it all, but I had to learn not to feel guilty for taking those much needed breaks, you know, really understanding my limits. And I think I learned a lot about that and a lot about myself in that regard, because no doctor really wants to let patients down and they don't want to let themselves down. You know, we're all pretty driven. So, you know, you can still be professional, but also know what your limits are and grasp that and do things for yourself, you know, whether it's, you know, going outside and going for a quick run, or if it's, you know, if you're musical, going to play your piano or your musical instrument, or you know, take a bath, whatever it may be, read a book, but really step away and come back and you'll be much more refreshed and be able to, you know, help patients. And then I think, as I said, the summer, well-timed with that nicer weather, there was more of a, we were able, at least within Amwell, to handle that volume a little bit better and you know, put in different processes internally that helped us to handle that. But now, again, I think we're getting into another term that we talked about in this webinar, something called decision fatigue, where, you know, you as the provider, we're giving similar advice to each patient, though each patient is nuanced, but you still have to go through these same things. So if you think about, you know, if you came in with a visit, let's say you were sick and you were worried you might have COVID, you know, the doctor has to, first of all, decide how sick you are and what sort of treatment they can offer, if any, and make sure you don't have to go to the hospital. Maybe make sure you can stay at home. Then we have to talk about testing. Okay, so where can you get tested? And, you know, a lot of patients don't know where to get tested, so we have to help them navigate that. Many know where to go, but navigate that nonetheless. And then understand those results. So here we are, more decisions. What do these results mean? Well, what if it's negative, doctor, and I'm still feeling this way? And then you have to really look at that individual risk. Okay, tell me again about your medical health. Who lives with you? Is anyone who lives with you sick? Tell me about their medical health. Who do you plan to visit in the next 2 weeks? Especially since Thanksgiving, we've had to have these conversations. Now, what about those people? What do they do for a living? And tell me about their circle. So you see, it's not as quick as, oh yeah, it looks like it's a cold and let's do this. And if you're not better, call me in 3 days. I already went with, you know, I just went through with you 5 or 6 steps that are unique to each individual. And it's a lot of decision making with the patient. You don't want to forget anything, obviously, as a provider. And so that's exhausting in and of itself. So a little bit of decision fatigue, I call it. But we're able to make meaning of all this and really use resilience in ourselves as providers, but also with the patients, and really get through some thoughtful patterns. I'm sure all of the providers like myself have some notes written down next to them that they can refer to. We have some internal devices that help us stay on track, but you know, you really need to stay connected with that patient while you're navigating everything and give them support. And I'm also a coach. I used to coach back when I was a little younger, and I still feel I coach my patients every day. But there was something called the Positive Coaching Alliance, which said, you know, for every negative comment you have to give a patient or a player, let's say, you want to give 5 to 10 positive things. So, you know, to pick out, hey, you're doing a great job. You're resting. You're isolating yourself well. You're wearing your mask. Oh, but by the way, you know, this is something you need to still work on. So again, presenting it in a light where it's going to be received by the patient in a positive way, and that they're going to be able to understand what you're saying and hear it. You don't want to turn them off with giving them negative or scary thoughts right from the beginning. So being positive is part of it. And as providers, again, to get back to what you asked initially, I think you have to know what works for you, know your limits, do something in between patients, step away from the computer, do a few stretches, whatever it takes to bring that same level of compassion back to that next patient. And I will say, as a group, providers are, or should be, and are compassionate with each and every patient. So just reminding yourselves why you're here doing this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think your comments around in the phrase decision fatigue, I think laying all that out, it certainly sounds difficult and burdensome. And in the industry, we've been focused on improving the provider experience for a while now. That's been a topic of conversation as long as I've been covering or writing about healthcare. So how can telehealth then transform the provider experience, and how can leaders ensure this technology is integrated and sort of expanded in a way that, you know, doesn't contribute to burnout, doesn't layer on to the decision fatigue? You know, what are some best practices to really streamline telehealth, the use of this technology?
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that answer. And I've probably said a few of the things that can be used to answer that as well. But if nothing else, the use of telemedicine as a provider has really reaffirmed to me the value of and the future of telemedicine. And that, you know, I think we all know this, but this pandemic has sort of brought it to a head where patients and providers alike can say, wow, thank goodness for this. You know, I'm still able to reach my provider. I'm still able to get my medication refills, you know, whatever it may be, but it just reaffirm that. But I think, you know, now that patients know about it and like it, you know, if you aren't using telemedicine in some way, whether it's on the phone or the video rather, which is, you know, what I think is the best type of a visit, you know, you're going to want to think about it. And I have to say, it's not necessarily for every provider. I think some providers are better at it than others. And, you know, you mentioned those best practices. I think, you know, that's probably one of them, is to realize after trying it a little bit, you know, this isn't for me, but it doesn't mean I can't use it in some way. You know, maybe someone else in my practice can offer it. But I think it's something you should know about as a provider. And, you know, one of the obvious ways that it has made such a difference in the patient experience and really allow providers to use it and not contribute to burnout is you're keeping sick patients out of your workspace. And, you know, you talk to any provider who has been sick and still goes to work, that's a huge reason for burnout. You know, you're not going to get as sick, I think, because you're keeping those sicker patients out of your waiting room. You might assess them or triage them virtually and realize, okay, I do need to see that one. That one, probably with that fever, is something I can manage and touch base with them tomorrow or the next day, or perhaps someone else in my office staff can. So, you know, you're really triaging at a higher level this way rather than just over the phone. And if the doctor is doing that or any provider is doing that, it's going to be that more of a decision than just having a front office staff who may not be trained in any clinical medicine. So, you know, I think that's real important there. I think that some of the other best practices, once you've decided, okay, I am going to use this, is realizing, that, again, I alluded to it earlier, that you're not going to want to say, okay, well, I'm doing telemedicine all day today. That's going to be a quick burnout, especially if you're busy. So, you know, look at what works for you. And you may have to try a few things first, but my suggestion would be to not insert it into your day, like in gaps. You know, like say you work an hour and then you do an hour of telemedicine. I don't think that would be ideal right away, because we all know brick and mortar patients can take longer than expected. So can, you know, virtual visits as well. So really corner off a time of day. You know, maybe it's going to be 2 days a week. Maybe it's 1 day a week. Maybe it's mornings one day, afternoons the other day for a few hours. But know that this is, okay, this is my telemedicine time. And I think for many, it's certainly not easier. I want to make sure providers know that. I don't think it's easier at all. But I think it's a refreshing way to talk to patients that, you know, variety stimulates all of us. And for many providers who have never used this before, it's visionary. You know, it's a new way. So it's going to be exciting. And 8 years ago when I started this, that was a great draw for me. It was to do something new. And because I really was passionate about it, and I, you know, I still am. But I think that, you know, corner off a period of time, you know, maybe 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 at the end of the day or the beginning of the day, when you can, you know, just have a different feel, a different vibe when you're sitting at a computer with your webcam in a private space and engaging those patients. And I think that providers will quickly realize it's a very more intimate visit. You're really focused on that one problem in front of you. Whereas when you go into the office, you might be distracted by, you know, a knock on the door, your assistant needs something, or perhaps a phone call or a page from a patient in the hospital, or you're working on the EMR, you know, or the parent brought a child with them and the child is distracting in the office space. So it's much more focused. And because of that, I think that providers get a very good glimpse into really how sick that patient is, or how concerned, if they're not sick, how concerned that patient is. Because when you think about it, when a patient comes into the office, they're dressed for the day. You know, they're ready. They're usually on their way to work or their way home from work, perhaps. The kids are often with them on the way or something like that. So when they call from their home or from a secure space, you're seeing them as they are. They may not be dressed for the day. You know, they may show you how sick they are or how concerned they are if it's not an illness. So you really get another glimmer into their world that you don't get when you see them in the office space. And I think physicians, you know, would like that. I think it's a really good way to become more efficient as well. You can stay on time a little bit more with virtual visits because you can educate patients as to what to expect. It's going to likely be new for them as well. But you can say, you know, hey, we're focusing on your cold today. We'll talk about your diabetes in the office in a week. You know, let's just focus on this. So you'll get more efficient. And if we can have, you know, reimbursement follow with that, I'm sure all providers will like that. But that is being worked on for sure. So I think that the best practices are not a chore, however that's going to work in your workflow. Carve out a period of time in the day and in the week where you can be mentally prepared. Okay, this is my telemedicine.
So then I just have one more question before we sign off here. So when it comes to the technology itself, what characteristics are most important in a telehealth platform to, you know, help address the burnout problem?
Yeah, I think hands down, you want a platform that will run smoothly. It really can be a drag for a provider to be seeing patients and have persistent troubles with the technology, whether it's with the broadband width and the Wi-Fi connection, or it's with the platform itself and hard to, you know, being hard to navigate. So, you know, when I train providers on their first telemedicine visits, I'm pretty clear about test your own system before you connect with those patients. And so every day before I sit down, I tend to do that. I'll make sure my camera looks good, that I'm the right distance away. I will test, you know, upload and download speeds if I need to, you know, if there are storms in the area or there's a problem with the connection. I usually always recommend being hardwired. I use an Ethernet cable as much as I can in my particular setup. I'm pretty rural. So checking that all of those connections are strong really helps. And then secondly, check your lighting, make sure that that's good. You want to have a backup headset if you need. You want to have a backup camera if need and a speaker. I know I do. I mean, it's not a bad idea if you're going to do this full time like I do. And then the platform itself. And so I rely on Amwell and their wonderful technology for this. But, you know, you want to have ease of use. With a click of the button, you want to be able to pull up a template, perhaps, that is curated for the diagnosis that that patient has in front of you. You want the capability of text expansion. You know, just to be able to put in a few characters and have a whole paragraph pop up is so helpful. I know I missed that not too long ago when I had to switch out computers and I had to upload all this stuff again. It really makes a difference in your efficiencies. You can see more patients that way, and you can also just get through the visit without looking down so much. You know, you can maintain that eye contact and really give the patient the attention that they deserve. Also, as good as I may be and as good as the tech may be, you also need support. So if I have a problem with connecting with the patient, maybe I lost them halfway through and I can't seem to reach them, you want to have that support person or team that, like, we have an operations team on standby that can help us during a visit. And I think that this is most useful, and fortunately it does not happen very often, but in an emergency situation, if I identify a patient needs, let's say, an ambulance, I can call this network operations team. I can ask them to dispatch the ambulance to the address, and then I can stay connected to that patient. Also, if there is any broad bandwidth issue, I can reach out to that Notkins, my operations support rather, and say, hey, you know, I have a patient waiting. I can't get to them. Can you transfer to them someone else? And that way the patient isn't left standing. Hey, I don't know, you know, what to do here. The doctor can't communicate with me. So, you know, it really has to be easy to use. You want to have the support there that you need and be able to communicate with the patients, because let's face it, as providers, that's what we want to do. We want to see that patient. We want to have a good conversation, be able to document easily, make sure the patient understands follow up, and then move on to the next one. We really don't want to be sidelined with slow technology, lack of support, and, you know, sort of a clunky platform. So those are probably the best ways to prevent burnout. And I can tell you, I really like our platform. It works easily. So I guess that's a testament to why I'm still here after 8 years.
Absolutely. I think that the ease of use piece and that support piece as well are just both so important. Dr. Finkelstein, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh, happy to be here, Brian. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
I'd also like to thank Amwell for sponsoring this episode. Listeners, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.